the next hour, hear how 13-year NFL vet thinks.
You can't just do it one play. No. You got to reset. You got to do it over and over and over again. Yeah. Yeah. Come out here with a win. Let's do it.
This is Brown safety Rodney McLeod.
Touchdown score, Rodney McLeod.
Yeah, he is in the touchdown club, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of guys have not scored a touchdown yet, but their teams around the league, and you have a touchdown.
Yeah, that felt good in the moment.
But he's careful. Yeah.
Yeah, it felt good in the moment, of course. That was number four, but, you know, it felt a lot better with a team victory.
Well, we said the minute you score that touchdown, we're like, this is
yeah,
it.
Game,
this is it. This
right?
is going to be a that win. Was, yeah. Like, you had to be thinking that way.
Yeah, I literally told the receiver on the other side, DJ Turner. So that's my, like, little bro. Went to the same high school as me. Proud of him. But I said, you know we're about to make this run, right? And then next thing you know, next play, I get the scoop and score. And everything is looking like that is going to happen. And, you know, of course, we know how it ended up.
My brain, everybody's brains work a million miles a second as opposed to what goes on in real life. So I immediately started texting them because I thought we're going to win now.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to happen. We're going to win. And even after the phantom hold call, are you allowed to comment on that? Or are they going to fine you?
I mean, honestly,
do me a favor.
I don't know what else. You know, you can do from what I've seen, the angles. I feel like Nick is doing what he's coached to do, what most linemen do, you know, keeping your hands inside. And it's unfortunate that a huge play for our team was wiped out, you know, by that call.
You can write down what you think and then I can say it and nobody needs to know. And then cause they can't find me. I don't play in the
NFL. That's fine. They can't do anything to us.
So they can
well, let it rip.
Yeah.
Let it rip.
Well,
what's your stance?
I was upset. I thought it was garbage. I'm watching on TV. Like, let me take you through my emotions. So last week, and I know you don't listen, like a school teacher called in and she wanted me to guarantee a victory to her kids in a kindergarten class. And I did. Mm-hmm. And the last time I guaranteed a victory was when we played in Denver and Baker Mayfield shaved his face three times during the course of the afternoon in the game. And it was an embarrassment for everybody involved, them, myself. The harassment that I dealt with on air and online was something I'll never forget. And so I was very hesitant to do it, but then a school room full of children called. Like, the children were yelling in the background, Rodney.
It wasn't
a put-on.
Yeah.
So I guaranteed it, and then we lost. But during the game, like, I'm watching, and I'm, you know, we're up 10-0 at the beginning, and I'm feeling okay. I know it's an NFL game, so these things change very quickly, and it did. And then when you score, I start texting them. I go, like, we're going to win this. I want him to bring in the football. Somebody give him the football. Somebody get Rodney the football, please. Like, I started kind of wanting to text, like, the equipment people, like, get the football for him because I wanted you to bring it in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, it's still 20-16 because immediately Dustin missed the extra point. And then the Nick Harris call, I thought it was garbage. I know I'm a Browns fan. I know I'm emotional at that time. I am 0.0 on the blood alcohol content when I'm watching that game on Sunday, and I was
that makes one of us
furious. Because, and then I got even more upset because I respect Ross Tucker a bunch, and I know he comes on the station, and I think he might end up being on this week. Is he not? And I thought he kind of stood down with Gene Steratore because they brought in Gene Steratore on the holding call.
Mm.
And Gene's like, well, and I'm like, well, I respect Gene Steratore. I respect everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, he is going to side with the refs. And was like, well, by the letter of the law, the back arm, this, that, and the other. I go, this is garbage. This is Bolsheviks in the very highest order.
We're
here.
Also yeah. comparing it to what we see week in and week out with Miles. And so we know that if other teams do not hold Miles, he gets to the quarterback. He wrecks the game. And I've said before, they can't call it every time. Because it would ruin the game for everybody involved, except for the Browns. Obviously, we want to see that stuff, but it would not make for a very competitive, fun watching game. And then we see the ticky tack on the other side, and then throw in the dimension of this is the biggest play of the afternoon. So, how much when that went down? We always talk about deflating moments for fans. What about for players? Does that happen? And do you have to regroup? Do you have to try to battle that type of adversity when it goes down?
Absolutely. It, you know, it's human nature. You know, you just had a very emotional moment now, you know, wiped away. And so you have to reset and regroup and, you know, just kind of settle everybody again and get the focus back into, okay, that play is now behind us. And you know, we talk about moving on to the next play, whether good or bad. Like, you can't sit there and you know, dwell on what has already occurred, but how do we, you know, affect the next play? And it's tough. And so I know one of the things I, you know, immediately did after that devastating play, you know, Coop was one of the first guys I saw. I'm like, man, you know, do it again. You know, you just trying to give some words of encouragement to that other side. And, you know, I was talking to Five too, like, man, look, like, rally them, because I know that, like, that hurts. It, you know, it hurts us. You know, last week, you know, we had a interception wiped away. So, you know, those moments like that, you know, we have to bounce back and then, you know, attack the next play like we did, you know, the previous.
I did notice no choreographed celebration after the touchdown.
Yeah, it kind of, honestly, this was caught in the moment. We had a pre-celebration, like, thought of, and then kind of, we just got caught up in celebrating with one another, and we didn't execute it as well. So we'll go back to the drawing board, but we got bigger things to worry about, to be honest. But there will be more sellies.
Well, just what is the mood? First of all, obviously, you know, you're with this team. Last year, you guys go on this amazing run in the month of December. You get to the playoffs. This whole town is on the same page, and we're loving life. This year, it's 1-3. You have two road games that I know you guys take these games very differently than fans do. We go, oh, that's a win. That might be a loss. Oh, that's going to be a win. We had you guys at probably 3-1 or 4-0. You know how we get. And I'm sure you had high expectations, too. What is the mood right now of, you know, that locker room when you're reporting back to work this week? What is it like?
Yeah, the mood is, you know, we're upset, and we're more so disappointed with ourselves, and knowing that, you know, we have let a few games go, winnable games that we felt very strongly about. Two, obviously, at home. We pride ourselves on being a great home team. And we haven't won at home yet. And then, again, you go on the road, you know, versus opponent like the Raiders. And, you know, they're down a few guys. Doesn't matter. We all know everybody's in this league for a reason. And we come out, you know, again with a loss. And so for us, it's just about, one, facing reality. Reality is we're a 1-3 football team, but this is just the first quarter of the year. And we talk about starting fast. We didn't do that. That's evident. But the only people that can get us out of this situation is us. And so we have to look our, you know, selves in the mirror and have a very tough conversation and self-reflection with one another. If we think that we're doing enough, we're not. You know, we need to do more, because that is what's required and that is what is demanded of us in order to resolve the issues that have been occurring. So, yeah, we're disappointed, but we're also very hopeful, because there isn't much hope that lives outside of, you know, the walls that we're in. You know, everybody, power rankings, your number this, your number that at the start of the season, oh, number one defense. No, like, this is a new year. Everything that you just said was what we did last year, what that team did last year. There are new people that are part of this group, and we have to figure out what is our legacy going to be. What is the narrative going to be about this 2024 season? And right now, I mean, I love this. This is a great challenge. Like, where most people are uncomfortable in these environments about adversity. Like, that's been my career. And I know a lot of other people on the team can relate. Like, in order for us to end up where we are all at right now in these seats, there was some sort of adversity we had to overcome. We have defied the odds. And so it's no different right now. 1-3, people don't expect us to be a playoff team. They don't expect us to win the division. But at the end of the day, we're going to stand strong as a team, and we're going to fight our way out of this, and we're going to get back on track.
Rodney McLeod in studio facing the music for a team that's 1-3 right now. We had a discussion earlier in the show about two-time coach of the year, Kevin Stefanski, and how much that we have talked about him as being that guy, a face of the organization. And we were wondering leadership-wise, because he, on TV, every time the camera's on him, he's not in guys' faces, you know, like some coaches in the NFL. You know, he seems somebody who is much more subdued, focused on, you know, the task at hand. What is he like behind the scenes? Give us a window into how he is, whether it's after a win or after it's a loss. Because now this is his fifth year. He's been around a long time. He's been around really good teams, and he's been around roller coasters. So what is Kevin Stefanski like?
Kev is steady. Like, he's exactly what you see. Like, even keel. And I think that's like my approach. Of course, there is emotion there. But at the end of the day, I think he's always just focused on like the present and how do we move forward, and never allowing anything, whether success or failure, to waver his routine, his preparation, his delivery. All of those things matter, because at the end of the day, you know, your leader is important, and some guys wear their emotions on their sleeves, and that can have an effect on your players. Like, if you're very emotional or just unstable, that can actually have an effect on like your team. Like, the fears that you have, it shows over on the guys. So Kev is Kev, and we all know he's a great leader for us, and he's going to continue to be that way. And honestly, it's he relies on us as players to fix, you know, a lot of the problems, and that's what it is. You know, Jim Schwartz, I love his quote, like, you know, good teams are coach led, but great teams are player led, and that's a fact, because at the end of the day, when we're in between those white lines, it's us. It's nobody else. It's us. And that's why I made that statement earlier. How we come out of this, how we determine our fate as players. And so that is Kev's approach. And we're going to continue to ride that way. And we're all going to rally behind him. And I know we're going to get to, you know, where we're all striving for.
I do want to know, because it did dawn on me. I was like, okay, he played in St. Louis. He started his career in St. Louis. There were some good teams. There were some bad teams there. You also were a part of the 2022 Colts. Mm-hmm. And that had a coaching change in the middle of that season. And my God, it's a 1-3 start. But you've been in the league 13 years. What personal experience do you draw on that makes that, you know, because you're the one who was talking to the defense at the end of warmups on Sunday. So it's like you're one of the leaders. What personal experience, if any, do you draw on where you know that this will make players tick and this will turn players off? What to avoid and what to lean into? And maybe it's different team to team, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think you lean in on what's facts. And, you know, facts is this is where we stand today. But on the other side, you know, there is, man, we have so much, you know, ball to be played. And at the end of the day, that's what we focus on, is that there is a tomorrow that exists for us, and we have the ability to fix everything that's like transpired over this first quarter of the season. And that's what we lean on, and we lean on that foundation that was formed in OTAs, in the Greenbrier training camp, like that bond and connecting and the love that we have for each other, the unconditional love, regardless of what happens, that is what's going to allow us to come out on this other side a lot better than most will expect of us. So that's what I tend to focus on. And I believe that's what's allowed me to persevere in other instances throughout my career. You know, Philly had to go on a five to six game stretch multiple seasons and made the playoffs. You know, and like, so it's doable because I've seen it work. But the biggest thing is having guys be committed to that, to the fix, and then also staying together and block out the noise. You know, blinders. Like that's what we got to do right now. It's we can't look left to right, worry about this team, that team. You can't listen to, you know, what this person is saying. No, let's stay together. Let's work, and let's go out here and just get it done.
Well, along those lines, we have Ronnie McLeod in studio, as we do every single Tuesday after the Browns games. So there was something that happened on the sidelines. And I always wonder with defense and offense and your factions, if you even know about this stuff when it goes down, because TV makes a big deal about it. And when DeJuan Jones and Deshaun were having their conversation, Jameis Winston comes over almost like a mediator in that situation. Do you even know about this as it's going down? Is this something that, hey, that's the offense. We're going to let them handle it.
Yeah.
How does that work?
I was not aware until, you know, hours after the game. And then locker room talk, you hear about what happened. And, of course, you know, because of our situation, right? If we win, nobody's talking about it. But with a loss, oh, like – now they're going to make a bigger deal of what's happening. But at the end of the day, man, we're family. And we all sitting here as married individuals, kids. There's times where you go at your wife, right? Over whatever. You forgot to do this, disagreement there. Like, that's just going to happen. But guess what? You say, I love you. Before you go to sleep, you wake up, you kiss her goodbye before you leave to come here into work. And that's just, it's no different. And I believe there has to be some sort of uncomfortability at times when we're trying to grow and we're trying to win. And when you understand the person's intentions behind it, that it's all coming from a place of love and respect. And, man, I just want to see you succeed. And not only you, I want us to succeed. Then the feeling is you're going to receive it the way that it's supposed to. And so what we saw is that two brothers, man, we're trying to win a football game. And we want to get on the same, you know, page, whatever it might be, whatever Four said to DeJuan. And guarantee, you know, now it's all love. We understand what took place, and DeJuan's going to continue to show up for Four. Four's going to continue to show up for DeJuan, and we're good.
So Lyman and I follow college football very closely. 2 weeks in a row, Hugh Freeze has kind of thrown his players under the bus. Now, that's college football. But we're very in tune to that because, you know, we're getting to the part of the season already where the leaves are starting to turn on some of these coaches here. Doug Peterson, they went 0-4 now to start this season. I mean, you guys beat him. They lost again on Sunday. They just made a huge investment in Trevor Lawrence, so he ain't going anywhere. But Doug Peterson's in question, and it doesn't help matters if he said this after the game.
We as coaches, we can't go out there and make the plays, right? It's a two-way street. So, you know, you guys can sit here and point the finger all you want, and that's fine. Point it right at me. I can take it, okay? I can take it. So whatever you want to ask me, say, whatever, right, go ahead.
They lost 24-20 against the Houston Texans. Again, 0-4, 0-3 away from home. What, if you hear that in the media, what is the reaction in the locker room? Have you had an 0-4 start before?
No. I've been fortunate enough not to have a 0-4 start. At the end of the day, we want accountability on all parts. We understand it is a team effort that goes from, you know, the coaches, you know, players, trainers, strength coaches, front office, everybody plays a role. But we all know that at the end of the day, when we line up and we're, again, in between those white lines, it is us as players to get the job done. But I would say there seems to be some deflect there, if I'm listening, to a point where level of frustration has occurred.
Yeah.
Where I think Doug is sitting there like, well, what more can I do?
Like
and so as a player, yes, how do you receive that? Because and only the people in that building can answer that question. Are the coaches really giving us everything in their power for us to win on Sundays and we're not doing our part? That's fair. If that's the case.
Well, it's like a trust to be like a adult enough to be able to take that, because it's, I mean, at some level, it's got to be true. Like, you guys are professional football players. Now, he's won a Super Bowl. He's not completely inept. Now, maybe he could be overrated for all we know. But he has won a Super Bowl. He knows what he's doing. And I think there would be a point of frustration going, hey, man, you guys can sit there and yell at me all you want, but I can only put them in the right places, and then they're off to their own devices.
Correct.
Like, you can't go make the plays for them.
Correct. But, and it's a two-way street, because, I mean, we've seen also how – man, you can have great talent, but there's bad coaching that exists in this league.
Oh yeah,
and that's why some people are shipped out every year. Some people also just don't know how to necessarily lead a group of men.
How many?
Right, that can be a factor too. Or and I feel like what's brewing right now, and we kind of hinted at it earlier, right, when couple weeks ago, like the trust, where is that trust between coaches and players? And it's going to reveal itself very soon in how people truly feel, because you know how it goes. You get in front of that camera, those questions get asked. There's only a matter of time before, again, the truth and what's happening in the dark starts to come to light.
So we're on the sidelines a lot, like for like high school stuff. And it's just like, there's plenty of really good high school coaches, but then there's guys who are slappies. And I'm like, this guy's a yeller. He's not a teacher. This guy, and it's the same thing when we're doing Lyman does college football on ESPN. I've only seen the Browns. Okay. How many, you just said, like, there's differences in coaches. Do we still hide bad coaches in the NFL?
Absolutely.
To this day?
Absolutely.
How can you tell who's a bad coach? Tell me, give me an example of a bad. Not if you want to name names, you go right ahead.
I'm not naming names. It's demonstrated by just, I feel like their actions. It could be their delivery. It, like, they can know so much, but they just don't understand how to necessarily coach. It could be a lack of accountability. All those things go into your responsibility as a coach. And it's no fault of any, but like, there are bad coaches that exist. You've seen teams transform from one coach to the next. And some coaches, they may have a spurt of time where they do well, and then eventually, that's what they lose the team. They lose that group. And once you do that, there's no point of return after that, I feel like.
Rodney McLeod with us in studio. So it's not often that a rookie quarterback can put up 80 points in 2 weeks, and that's who you're going up against this week with Jaden Daniels. He's completing an astonishing 82% of his passes. He had two games they didn't punt. It's not often that a rookie might have an attention of a vet like you. What are your early reads on what he's been able to do?
Yeah. Very impressed by what he's been able to do in the first quarter of this season. You can see he's really breathed life into that entire organization, and quite frankly, the city, like my hometown. You know, I hear a lot of the chatter. Literally, I was just in a group chat with my dad and my godpops, and one of them, unfortunately, is a Commanders fan. And he's like, man, I'm excited. Like, I haven't been this excited in a while. And so that's just the chatter. But you see it. You know, I got a glimpse last week. They play in the spotlight. And, he plays an amazing game. You know, it seems like he's in tune with the play calls. He's throwing the ball on time. And then he also has the ability to use his gift and escape the pocket when necessary, when things, don't go right. And so he has that off-schedule ability, too. So it's a great challenge for us. They're running the ball well. So they're playing good complementary football over there. And it's rare that you see, you know, a young man step into, you know, this situation and handle it the way that he's doing. But he definitely has our attention, and he deserves that. He's earned that to this point.
Now, do defenses, especially defenses with as many veterans as you guys have, do you get excited for that opportunity to feast on a rookie? Or is it the flip side, like, we don't have a lot of tape on this guy. We don't have a lot of tells. Like, there are guys you go up against, you've been like, all right, we see Gardner Minshew. He's played enough games now. You've seen him. You kind of know tendencies. Yeah. In this case, what are the tendencies of a kid who's kind of burst onto the scenes?
Yeah, I think at this point, there's plenty of tape. You know, four games in, like, you have a great understanding of who he is and his identity. So I don't think that'll be a problem. I feel like, yeah, first game of the year, you definitely kind of in the dark. And how are they going to use this new tool that they have? But for, you know, in our situation, we have enough tape. You know, it's going to be on us to prepare, to study, to try to exploit some of his weaknesses like we all have, and be able to make it uncomfortable for him. Even though right now, you know, he seems very comfortable, confident, poised, but it's on us as a defense to create that discomfort and to, you know, just muddy the water a little bit and make it difficult for him come Sunday.
I don't know if I could live in a world. I'm not used to a world where Washington has a good quarterback. It's been a very long time. Like, people are like, well, Joe Theismann. I'm like, I was a baby. I don't even, like, I was very young. Like,
RG3 for a glimpse. Yeah, Kirk Cousins. They went from like RG3 to Kirk Cousins era, you know, because I was playing versus Kurt when I was in Philly, and RG3, we all came in the lead together. I played him in St. Louis. But yeah, and then after Kirk, I don't know where they went from Kirk.
I mean, they tried a couple, but it didn't really work. Are you surprised by what the Vikings have done to start off the season, considering the way you guys had a joint practice, a series of joint practices? Are you surprised at 4-0?
I'm very surprised. And I'm not saying that they wouldn't have a winning record, but I am surprised at the 4-0. Vikings that are looking very convincing. They're playing great football in all phases, obviously. And, you know, going against them, you know, talented, but I didn't leave those scrimmages thinking that they would be where they are. And that goes to just to show you right then and there. And like, man, we don't know. None of us know. And all it takes is, you know, a little bit of confidence, trust in each other. And winning is, that feeling is contagious. And when you come together and you have it, it's beautiful. And so I'm happy for them that they're off to a good start. I'm envious of their start. But, you know, we'll see, you know, how this thing ends up, you know, for us both. But right now you couldn't ask for a better side. I don't know how many teams are 4-0, two? No?
Yes. Two teams, Kansas City.
Kansas City and Vikings, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Mitch, please.
All right, guys, the Cavs media day yesterday, the team's top big man, Jarrett Allen, speaking to the media about his suffering a cracked rib during last year's Cavs playoff run, which kept him out for multiple games. And during that time, some were wondering what was keeping him questionable status for every game. Allen did address the matter on Monday at the Fieldhouse.
I think that definitely contributed to the skepticism of the injury. Now that it's out, looking at the CT scan, you can still see the piece of bone that's still floating in my body somewhere, you know, so it was definitely a worse injury than people thought.
All right, so you hear that. You hear that. I don't know if you knew about this little controversy that got stirred up last year during the playoffs where after the Cavs were eliminated, you had a veteran player who was only here for a short amount of time say, yeah, you know, we were wondering about Allen. We thought he could play. Like, we thought he needed to do what he needed to do to play, meaning painkillers.
His former coach made a comment about it as well.
Yeah, so that stuff... We always wonder, like, the locker room knows. The locker room knows when a guy is definitely playing through stuff. And they also know when a guy probably could play but is opting, for whatever reason, to sit out. Is that something taboo to talk about, you know, in a locker room?
I think the people, the respect factor comes into play when you see a guy, you know, put it all on the line, and you know they're battling and barely hanging on, but they put the team first. And I think, you know, when you see the opposite, then you just question more so, you know, their commitment completely. Because, you know, in this sports world, like, we all play with some form of injury. It's just at what level is your injury to the point where is it detrimental to the team? Where if I'm out there, I'm hurting us because I can't give my all? Or, you know, or do you have something else going on that you feel is more important than what we're trying to achieve? I really think that's the point.
Jeremiah Smith, amazing against Michigan State. Ryan Williams, amazing in their win over Georgia. The big play, the spinning off the two guys, the whole deal. What a 17. Ryan Wilson is 17 years old. Jeremiah Smith is 18 years old. Are they wasting their time spending the next 2 years in the pros or...
In college,
or is being 17 and 18 much different, or at that point would be 19 and 18? Is that much different than in a grown man's league with a 34-year-old Rodney McLeod?
It's definitely different, but at the same time, why leave now? You know, you got the NIL buzzing, you know, people making millions of dollars, you know, 100,000, like, you can set yourself up on top of what you're going to end up making in the league. So, you know, if I'm them, I'm like, great. Guess what? My stock rose now in two areas, you know, draft, but also in these deals that guys are being offered. So, you know, for me, I think you're going to see, and we have seen, guys just stay in college and opt to stay all 4 years, you know, now, rather than maybe even coming out year three because of the possibilities of what they can make in college versus, you know, the possibilities of what they can earn in the league. So now, you know, you're going to see some tough decisions being made. But, I mean, right now those guys are playing well. Keep doing it, young man.
Well, hell, with the COVID year, what, the Oklahoma State quarterback who just got benched, he's in year seven?
Guys have been eight.
I mean, that's a whole career. I mean, you should get a pension from that if you're at Oklahoma State.
Well, you just said a UNLV player, they're 3-0. The quarterback of the team says he didn't get what he was promised.
I heard it.
Obviously didn't get it in big-time contract.
Lima told me, it was weird, we had to flip-flop on this because at first I was like, yeah, go get yours. If they promised you, and then the story changed where no, he was given what he was offered,
mm-hmm.
and then it changed later that well if he's not gonna fulfill his end of the deal, then he's not gonna fulfill his end of the deal. Then I have to say that he's a fool for doing such a thing. Then it came out where he was just offered by some rogue assistant, according to what they were saying, $100,000. All right, who's right, who's wrong? Which one's right? I said he should have honored his commitment originally. I still stand by it, even though, God, they boat race Fresno State over the weekend. I know you ain't paying attention to that. You got a game to get ready for. But who's right, who's wrong? You stay and honor the commitment of the team, or can you go ahead and leave because they didn't sign on the line, which is dotted?
I'm an old school guy, so I'm going to honor my commitment and hope that on the back end, I'm going to be rewarded accordingly.
There you go.
I'm an old school guy.
That's a good answer. What's it going to mean to have Nick Chubb come back to the practice field?
Man, it's everything. We all know what Chubb, you know, means to not only the team but the organization. And I'm happy for him that, you know, he's worked extremely hard, and, you know, in the shadows, right? You know, he had this Batman aura, right? And what he's been doing behind the scenes is now has allowed him in this moment, you know, for him to return and get back to playing ball because, you know, it'll be good to see 24 back out on that field. He's deserved that. He deserves it, and he's earned it by the way he's committed to the grind this offseason. And I'm excited to go against him this week. You know, I told him, I said, man, get yourself ready. I you know what I'm saying? Get your pads ready. Like, we hitting.
You're laying wood on each other? Speaking of hitting, Winston Reed, he's probably my favorite special teamer now. He carries a hammer everywhere he goes.
Man, you better get down when you see Win. I'm telling you. big hit Win. Like, he's a guy that is very just like soft-spoken, quiet, reserved, but man, like, is he packs a punch. And it's been impressive to see just how quickly he's made an impact for us on teams. I'm hoping to see more of it as we go throughout this year.
All right, get a win on Sunday.
Come on. Any back guarantees? In the hometown.
Anybody want to
need it?
Offer up a guarantee?
Do I want to guarantee? Gotta have it. Does he want to guarantee? You want to guarantee it?
No, I don't do that. I don't do that. But, you know what I'm saying? We're gonna get this win.
Would you turn down a room full of school children who are begging you for a guarantee, though?
Absolutely not.
So,
come on.
So all we need to do is get school children and you'll guarantee?
Yeah, get the kids all in here. Then we got to pack them up, bring them to the game, too. We need that same energy at the game.
There you go. Heather, the elementary school teacher.
Come on.
Was anybody sober in the crowd in Vegas?
Doubt it. Why would you be?
All right, Rodney, hopefully it's going to be a lot more fun next week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Or we'll just go over the nonsense list with him. That'll be a lot of
fun. He's got to score more touchdowns. We need more touchdowns.
Yeah. Yeah, putting them down on Rodney touchdowns. All right, we're back tomorrow, 6 to 10.